Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, hello, ho. Time to lap. Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I hope that you have enjoyed that little classic reggae by Mr. Kevin MacLeod, who I engage each week as we gather in the backyard to relax and take a virtual trip to Jamaica, land we love. In the backyard, when we get together, we just hang out, talk about very positive things about our beautiful island, and just reminisce on those good old days when we were growing up, visited, or for those of you who are still there, I hope you're enjoying the trade winds as we do, no matter where we are, whether it's hot or cold. We can feel those winds just going across our face as we chill, relax, and just think, no problem, Mon. So tonight, I am very excited because although officially History Month is done, we're always doing history here in the backyard. And if you're on my list, you will see that tonight we're going to be talking about a very important visit that was made by Dr. Martin Luther King in 1965, which was, you know, shortly before his passing, his death. So I am sort of very excited to give you some details and also some details about, you know, his timeline of his life. I think whenever I, you know, talk about something of the past as it relates to Jamaica, I am always inspired about different things about whatever we talk about. And tonight I have so many things that I'm inspired about because for those of you who might not be familiar with the fact that Jamaica is almost first with everything, and we had someone that was involved in civil rights long before Dr. Martin Luther King. So we're going to sort of tie them together tonight and give you some facts that, you know, I'm sure you know some of this, but, you know, you will be intrigued to see how it ties together. So let me start first by giving you some details from Dr. Rebecca Tortella's article in Peace, on Pieces of the Past, which is available online. You can Google it. It's a series that she did for her thesis. And as a matter of fact, it's made into a book. So if you would like to, you can read the articles online, but if you wanted a book, it makes a beautiful gift. You can order it from Amazon. So let me start with reading, and as usual, I want to welcome the callers on the board and those listening online. And for those of you online, you know the number is right there if you want to call in and interact with me, because that's what a Labrish is. So feel free, I want to welcome all the callers tonight and ask you to feel free to hit one on your telephone when you want to make a comment, a sidebar, or, you know, just say hi. So as it, in Dr. Tortella's article, she says you could say that it was Anthony Allen's dream to have the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King visit Jamaica. Allen, then a medical student at University of the West Indies and a member of the Chapel Management Committee, was one of those who nominated Dr. King to deliver the sermon at the 1965 valedictory service. On the afternoon of Sunday, June 20th, 1965, that dream came true as Reverend Dr. King arrived in Jamaica along with his wife, Coretta. So let me just sidebar here now. Can you imagine this young man? I don't know him. I'm sure that perhaps he is, you know, in Jamaica or someplace, or some of his children or relatives must be very proud that he had a dream too. He had a dream. He was impressed with Dr. King, apparently, and wanted him or thought about him as being the ideal person to deliver the graduation sermon. So I just think that is remarkable, and I want to use this opportunity to invite not only young folks, but even the seniors. You know, when you have a dream, you got to get it started. So I suppose he got together with his committee and, you know, do whatever they needed to do to get the job done. As I read about him, I am assuming that he's perhaps now a very successful medical doctor, but I just want to take a minute to congratulate him on making the effort to do what he did, because I'm sure at the time he did not know that within a very short time, Dr. King would not be with us. So I see I already have a hand up, so I'm going to open up the mic to 954-618, and I'll go back to my article. Good evening. You got Margaret in the backyard, relaxed and feeling the trade winds. Who do I have?
This is Audrey from Fort Lauderdale, Margaret.
Hi. Welcome, Miss Audrey. Welcome to the backyard.
Yes, thank you. So you have a very interesting subject.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I'm so excited because, you know, there are little details that I think really stand out to us. And sometimes after you read an article, you know, you scan through it. Everybody's sort of scanning now. There's so much information that, I like to take a minute to really bring home the points that I know are important to me. So I can just think of that young man. I don't know how old he was at the time, but you can imagine his excitement and joy when, you know, he got Dr. King to come.
That's right.
And I don't know if any of the listeners know, but that was the first and only visit that Dr. King made to Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
So let me thank you, Audrey, for calling in and making yourself heard.
Yes.
So hang in there with me. So the article goes on that somebody else there, Hillary Sherlock, who was the daughter of Sir Philip Sherlock, then UCWI's vice chancellor, remembers accompanying her parents to the airport to meet Dr. and Mrs. King. A self-described child of the 60s, this was not the first time that Hillary had seen Dr. King. As a student at Oberlin College in Ohio. Hillary had taken part in numerous civil rights marches and had heard Dr. King speak in person before. She, along with countless others, admired him for his leadership of one of the most crucial movements in American history. Now we are at the graduation. That is, this is an article that, I, as I mentioned, I'm reading from Dr. Tortella's article, Pieces of the Past. Now, this Sunday evening at UWI, Mona campus, the 400-plus graduates donned their traditional caps and red gowns and filed into the chapel where the services are traditionally held. No, not in the chapel. They did not file into the chapel, but into the assembly hall in order to accommodate the large audience generated by Dr. King's appearance. As Dr. Allen remembers today, it was a packed house, and Dr. King was very well received by all present, especially the students. Keith Gardner, then director of sports at UWI, remembers feeling part of a warm gathering that was not limited to students at UWI or and UWI personnel. Gardner, who now runs a sport program for the MultiCare Foundation, added, "There were people from every walk of life. There, a lot of them were not even seated, yet that did not cause any kind of problem, as everyone was united in the anticipation of hearing Dr. King. Everyone was caught up in the sheer exuberance of the moment, so glad he had come and so privileged to be able to see him." Professor Patrick Bryan, then a graduating student in liberal arts and now a professor of history at the UWI, remembers that Dr. King may have spoken for close to 40 minutes, but that it seemed like five. "It was an incredible experience to hear so strong and commanding a speaker. It was as if you were entrenched when listening to him." Professor Bryan added, "He used no notes and talked without a hitch. And his subject was facing the challenge of a new age." Now, we don't have the, you know, the text of his speech. So they're just giving you, you know, parts of what he said. Now, Professor Patrick Bryan, then a grad... Oh, I read that already. Dr. King's speech was entitled Facing the Challenge of a New Age, and he spoke about the passing of an old colonial order, the need for a worldwide brotherhood, given that we are all increasingly interdependent, the need to fight any kind of injustice with love, and the need for us all to strive to be the best we can be at whatever we choose to do in our lives. When asked what they remembered about the sermon, especially, Allen, Gardner, and Bryan each quoted the following segment. And I, this is so profound and deep. And this is it. "If it falls to our luck to be street sweepers, sweep the streets like Raphael painted pictures, like Michelangelo carved marble, like Shakespeare wrote poetry, and like Beethoven composed music, sweep the streets so well that all the host of heaven and earth would have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I am reading it and I am in goose pimples. I have never seen that quote anywhere before. You know, we hear about parts of, and this is my sidebar here, I'm off of the article now. We hear parts of the speech that he wrote, you know, on the mountain, different speeches. But I went to some of the documentation on Dr. King, you know, on his different websites, and there is no mention of that quote. But I thought that was so strong and powerful, I mean, so relevant today. I mean, it's timeless. That, and I think it was perhaps just given in Jamaica. And I just, it's just blowing my mind. You know, I'm going to read it again for you. If it falls to our luck to be street sweepers, notice he mentioned, you know, it doesn't matter what we do, it's how we do it. It's the passion that we put into doing what we do. So nothing is demeaning if you're going to be doing it. And it brings me to a memory gem that I remember so well from, you know, the old days when we did memory gems every day. And it is good, better, best. Never let it rest until your good is better and your better best. Miss Audrey, you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, it applies. That's exactly what he was saying. You know, Beethoven composed music, and I'm sure he didn't perhaps start off great, although he was gifted, but he kept doing it until, you know, he might not have gotten the recognition when he was alive or the time he was young. But, you know, his music is timeless. He's remembered for something. So, as Dr. King said here, no, let me go on. Sweep the streets like Raphael painted pictures, like Michelangelo carved marble, like Shakespeare wrote poetry, and like Beethoven composed music. Sweep the streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth would have to pause and say, here lived a great street sweeper. That's, there's so much message in that one short phrase that I am hoping, and I named the three people that were interviewed by Dr. Tortella, I suppose, when she was writing this article, but I don't know what, they didn't say how much the, 400 plus graduates donned their traditional caps. So it would be interesting to know of the 400 that listened to this speech, how many of them remembered it. And whatever they're doing, you know, there's no documentation on where they are, what they graduated from. But I am just hoping that what they heard that day from this great man really resonate well with them, and that they're doing whatever they're doing to leave a lasting impression. Wow, it is really, really heavy. So let me go on to something else he said. The time is always right to do right, Dr. King exhorted, noting that whenever a new nation comes into history, it brings with it new challenges and new responsibilities. The great challenge facing all of us today is to somehow stand before the opportunities of the moment and face the challenges of the hour with creativity and with commitment and determination. That is from the article. Let me finish up the article, and then I'm going to give you a timeline of Dr. King's life, because I found out some very interesting facts that I didn't know before. Now, back to the article. Following the service, Dr. King was whisked away to a dinner at King's House, hosted by Governor General Sir Clifford Campbell and Lady Campbell. The next day, at a packed civil reception at the National Arena, Dr. King was given the keys to the city of Kingston after delivering another stirring 40-plus minute address. Now, there's no documentation on what he spoke about then, but I'm sure it was quite riveting. He began by saying that he had never felt more at home anywhere else in the world, adding, "In Jamaica, I feel like a human being." He said he was proud to be among his brothers and sisters on this wonderful island. Isn't that great, Audrey?
Yes.
I mean, he could feel, you know, Jamaica is such a mecca for everything. You know, sure, Jamaica had its challenges, but everyone that came there, whether they came from a different culture, you know, they were coming in those days from all over. Just being on the island would make people feel different and act different. And I'm saying all of this that I'm hoping that the people who live there now will remember some of these things and to get into more of a positive state of mind, that they can really, you know, bring back some of the joy of just being there, Because I don't know for anybody else, and anybody on the board is welcome to raise your hands. You know, I consider it just a blessing and a privilege to have been born and raised there. You know, I can't think of anywhere else I would rather have made my entrance. So I'm really very passionate about, you know, trying to bring to the consciousness of everybody what we can do. I mean, a lot of us not going back and blah, 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 but we can reminisce about, you know, the joy and the pleasure, regardless of what was happening around us. There's always good in everything that is happening, no matter how bad it may seem. So let me go back to the article. Dr. King spoke with great passion about the freedom explosion occurring in his own country, explaining that the time for change was now. We want our freedom, we want it here, and we want it now. Following the address, Dr. King dropped in unexpectedly to the delight of all 500 present at a reception at the home of the USAID director. The following day, he visited the grave of national hero Marcus Garvey to lay a wreath out of respect for a man he said gave Negroes in the U.S. a sense of dignity and a sense of personhood, a sense of manhood, and a sense of somebody-ness. I've never heard that word before, but I know exactly what he was talking about. Because, you know, Marcus Garvey did a lot for the U.S. And that's what I want to read a little bit about from another historian who is Olive Senior. She's the author of the Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage, which I really want to tell you, that's a great book to have in your household, or to give, especially if they're, you know, Jamaicans, as I call them, or Jabrits, children of Jamaican parents or grandparents, because it gives a good history of several things. It's an encyclopedia of the heritage. So I was given this book as a gift, and I really think it makes a wonderful gift because it has a lot of good documentation. So first, what I want to do now is give you a little timeline about Dr. King's life, because I found these facts very interesting. And Audrey, did you know that Dr. King was 15 years old when he started college?
No, I didn't.
I mean, for the listeners, I live in Atlanta, Georgia, which I absolutely love. But actually, you know, Morehouse College, which is one of the real old black colleges here, he graduated from Booker T. Washington High School and was admitted to Morehouse at the age of 15.
Wow.
Dr. King was born in 1929, and his parents were the Reverend and Mrs. Martin Luther King, and they lived in Auburn. They lived on Auburn Avenue, I'm sorry, in Atlanta, Georgia. So he was a Georgia boy. He graduated from Morehouse when he was 19 years old. And he entered Boston University for graduate students. After that, you know, in 1948, he graduated from Morehouse and then entered Boston University. He got married when he was 24.
Oh.
And he got his doctorate of philosophy in theology when he was 26. And he started his first involvement was the bus boycott with Rosa Parks. And he was, 26. He was 26 in 53. He was only 26 years old at the time. You know that at 26 is just a young man because, you know, as the experts claim that men mature later than women. Women, girls tend to mature, I don't know if they're talking about brain-wise or otherwise, earlier than men. So at 26, he was quite young to get involved in something like that. So I'm going down the timeline here. When he was 28, he formed the Southern Christian Leadership Conference to fight segregation. He was 28 years old at that time. Now, in 1958, he wrote his first book. No, I'm sorry, Congress passed the first Civil Rights Act. King's first book, Stride Forward Freedom, is published. And that is just so amazing to me. Now, in 1958, when he was 29, he went on a speaking tour. Huh. And he's nearly killed when he was stabbed by an assailant, guess where? In Harlem.
Uh-huh.
In Harlem, he was stabbed by an assailant. He met with President Eisenhower in that year. Now, he visited India to study Gandhi's philosophy of nonviolence when he was 30 years old. Oh, my goodness. And he became an assistant pastor with his father at the church here in Atlanta after that. Now, in 1960, that happened. So, he was 31 when he started with the lunch counter boycott business in Greensboro. 32 in November, when he went Congress began the first freedom ride through the South. I'm sorry. Congress and Radical Equality Corps began its first freedom ride through the South in a Greyhound bus after the U.S. Supreme Court outlawed segregation in interstate transportation. Now, when he was 33, he was arrested Ain't that something? In Albany, Georgia. And jailed. On Good Friday, April 12th, Dr. King is arrested with Ralph Abernathy by the police. Oh, boy. When he was 34 years old, he leads 125,000 people on a freedom walk in Detroit. And when he was 35, this is 1964 then, he experienced his first harmful rejection by black people when he is stoned by the black Muslims in Harlem. I didn't really realize all that. King is awarded the Nobel Peace Prize on December 10th. Dr. King is the youngest person to be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize at the age of 35. That is 9 years after he became involved in the civil rights movement. And the following year is when he went to Jamaica. And he was arrested that same year, you know, in February. Did I say what month he went to Jamaica? But in February he was arrested in Selma, Alabama, during the voting rights demonstration. So now, in spite, I mean, his life was just so active in so many short years. You know, I think it's just remarkable. And, you know, whether a person's young or old, they can always get some inspiration just by knowing this. You know, he's accomplished a lot in a very short period of time. Let me just give you some more about the timeline here, and I want to talk about Marcus Garvey and how he ties into all of this. So, actually, he was just 39 when he died. I didn't even realize that. And then that was 3 years after he visited Jamaica. So I'm saying all of this to say that Mr. Allen or Dr. Allen, as I don't know where he is, but can you imagine how this is all so meaningful as it relates to Jamaica? Because, you know, my point is, once a person has an idea and they make a move on that idea, you never know where things are going to lead to. The thing about it is that Dr. King said, whatever you are doing, do it to the best of your ability. If you're working on a committee or getting together with a group of people or what, you know, a lot of times we as human tend to complain about everything that is not going right. But our duty, really, and our responsibility is just to do what we know is right or what's right for us to the best of our ability, because that's all we are really responsible for. And with that, I am going to open up the board that to anyone who want to make a comment, or I had said in my promo that if there's anyone who had ever met Dr. King or was involved with any of his efforts, if you are on the board and would like to share a story with us, now is your chance. So please hit 1 on your keypad, and I will know that you want to join the Labrish. So the board is now open, and for those of you listening online, if you want to call in, do it now, because we'd love to hear you. And I want to take a moment just to remind our listeners who may come by later, because a lot of people might not be available on the night we broadcast, but they seem to be coming back later. So you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday we are here each Thursday. We have changed our day to Thursday, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. So do I have any hands on the board? Oh, I don't see any hands, but you feel free at any time. Now, let me tell you about a little bit. We did a show on Black History Month, I think it was last year, sometime in February, about Dr. King. I'm sorry, Marcus Garvey. And now I want to really make the connection. So I'm reading from Jamaican Heritage, Olive Senior. And on the G, she has Garvey, Right Excellence Marcus. And he was born in 1887, and he died in 1940. Black internationalist and national hero of Jamaica, Marcus Garvey was born of humble parents in St. Anne's Bay, St. Anne's Parish. On leaving elementary school, he worked as a printer in Kingston and at an early age became involved in movements aimed at improving the lot of black people. In 1910, Garvey left Jamaica and traveled throughout Central America working and observing the conditions of blacks throughout the region. He went to England in 1912, where through personal contact and extensive reading, he deepened his knowledge of Africa and further refined his philosophy for uplifting the black people of the world. On his return home, in 1914, he formed the United Negro Improvement Association, UNIA, to unite all the Negro people of the world into one great body to establish a country and a government exclusively their own. The motto was one God, one aim, one destiny. But it was not until Garvey went to the United States in 1916 that his idea caught fire. From the first United States branch of the UN, UNIA formed in New York in 1916, Garvey was to build an enormous mass movement that would number millions of supporters in North America and the Caribbean and Latin American countries, where many immigrants, British West Indies workers, lived, as well as in Africa. Part of Garvey's plan to secure black independence was to establish black-owned business enterprises, and several efforts were made in that direction. The most significant was the steamship company known as the Black Star Line. However, largely because of poor management, this and other business ventures were to fail. Garvey, seen as a dangerous agitator by American authorities and the British colony administrators, was increasingly harassed and eventually indicted in the U.S. for using the mail to defraud. He was found guilty and sentenced to Atlanta Federal Prison, where he served 2 years of a 5-year sentence. And after an executive pardon, was deported to Jamaica. It doesn't say in the article who gave him the executive pardon. I think usually that is given by a governor or a president or somebody. But the article didn't mention who gave him the pardon. So he was deported to Jamaica. In spite of a considerable opposition to him on his return home, Garvey continued to challenge the system and organize the People's Political Party on a reformist platform. He ran for a seat in the legislature but lost, especially since most of his supporters in those days of restricted franchise did not have a vote. Garvey did gain a seat on the Kingston and St. Andrew Corporation, that's the KSAC, while in jail for contempt of court, but was unable to make any headway against the established system in achieving the changes he sought. In 1935, he again left Jamaica for England and died there in 1940. Garvey was named one of Jamaica's national heroes, and in 1964, his remains were brought back from England, and he had full national honors, buried with full national honors at National Hero Park. On August 1980, a bust of Garvey was unveiled at the Hall of Heroes of the Organization of American States, the first national figure from an English-speaking nation to be so honored. A statue of Garvey can be seen outside the parish library in St. Anne's Bay. Although he was ridiculed by many in his lifetime, in recent years there has been serious reconsideration of Garvey and his role in the international liberation of black people. He is now regarded as the father of the concept of black power. His writings and teachings also provided inspiration to many of the young nationalists in the immigrating nations of Africa. But Garvey was to die a frustrated man. Recognition of his visionary qualities and the acceptance of his ideas coming only after his death. Garvey, his teachings, and the association of his movement have continued to inspire Jamaican creative artists, especially reggae singers, and it gives the name of all the singers. But here's my point of reading all of this to you, that Garvey came to New York in 1916 and organized millions of people, not only in America, but in the Americas, South America, Africa. He had a lot of people following him long before Facebook. Can you imagine, Audrey, that communication was not as it is now, or not as it was during the time of Dr. King? You know what? We're talking about 1916.
Yeah. That's right.
This man picks up himself from Jamaica and comes to the U.S. and was able to do all that he did. Needless to say, there's more documentation of some of the challenges that he had right here in the U.S. And I think I talked about them when I did his life. You know, I'm just reading. I never got this article from Olive Senior's Jamaican Heritage before, so I thought it would be relevant to see the timeline here, because Marcus Garvey lived to be 53 years old. He was 53 years old when he died. He was 25 when he left for England the first time, you know, and he was only there for 2 years. He was younger, I think, when he came to the U.S. He was 29 years when he came to the U.S. here during that time. But you can imagine how difficult it was to do anything. And I believe that because he was coming from a country where, you know, at that time, black men and women were always doing things and being recognized at least to some degree, you know, we have Mary Seacole. We have a lot of people. Even during the time of the earthquake, there is a story that I did about a black judge, high court judge, who was negotiating. I don't remember whether he was negotiating or he was for the people or he was for the insurance company. But black people were in places of, you know, high position from that time. Black people were doing things. So he came to the U.S. with a lot more knowledge of who he was as a person. As Dr. King said, you know, when he was on the island, he felt like a person. He was not a nobody. He saw that there were Sir Campbell was a black man, and he was governor general, so it gave him a lot of self-esteem, let's put it that way. So I can see, I was just so intrigued when I read this, that Garvey, you know, died before Dr. King sort of came into his own. But right here in the United States, he was doing a lot of things to organize people about the cause, you know, of being free. So, yeah. So I just think that there was, as usual, you know, Jamaicans have been making their mark all over the world in very positive ways that might not be recognized right away. And I'm using all of this to encourage the young people and even the seniors that it is never too late to live your passion, to leave a legacy. It can be with one person. You know, if you inspire or help one person, especially the youth, the young people, you are leaving a legacy. So we all can do something to leave the world a better place. I really, really believe that. No matter what you do, no matter what capacity you do it in, you are leaving. It can be a family. I know a lot of times seniors tend to give up on the young people, you know. Oh, they're not interested. They couldn't care less. You know, they're on a different path. They don't want to hear what we have to say. But, you know, sometimes one little word of encouragement, one little idea that we might plant in their mind, because I can tell you, I did a little something for one of my grandson's school, and I taught them that same, I don't necessarily teach them, but I told them about that little memory gem, Good, Better, Best, and how it has resonated with me all my life, that if I'm going to do anything, I always remember those words. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it to the best of my ability, whether it's cleaning my house, cleaning my shoes, whatever. It doesn't matter. If I'm not going to do it to my best, don't do it. You know, as we would say, don't half do it. You know what I'd like to say, don't half-ass it. Just do it good. Or don't do it at all. And you would be surprised to know how many of those 8-year-olds that wrote me to thank me for giving my little talk to the class, some of them actually remembered it and wrote it out. So my point is, we never know in what way we're helping a person when we help them. You know, so whatever you're going to do, I say do it like Shakespeare did his thing. Do it like Beethoven did their thing. But do it. Do it to the best of your ability. And with that said, you know, we've been broadcasting almost an hour, so time goes fast. So I'm asking members on the board, if you would like a special for us, a special labrish, just let me know, because that's why we're here. As long as it's positive, and it will leave it, I'd love to hear some of your stories that you might have that relates. I'd love to interview some seniors and talk about perhaps what inspired them in anything. I know that I have been so inspired since I'm doing this research, you know, about Jamaica's history, because I know I didn't like history when I was in school. It was just too boring for me. But now with all of these people that are bringing to the forefront all of these wonderful stories about Jamaica and Jamaicans, I am just like a kid in a candy store. So I'm having a marvelous time, and I call myself putting a voice to a lot of the written history that is being done by these wonderful historians. So tonight I want to thank Dr. Tortella, and I want to thank Mr. Allen, wherever he was. He is now, that he was able to bring Dr. King to Jamaica to give that wonderful speech where he gave us that wonderful line that I don't see anywhere else. There are different documentation on his quotes, you know, just like how they, you can go Google President Kennedy's quotes. He had some wonderful things that he said that will live on, that have lived on, and will live on for a long time. And I really believe that what Dr. King shared with those Jamaican students and with the rest of the people who were there, because the room was packed with people who were not students from all different walks of life. And it's not until I read it while I was doing this research that I really could really see the power and the wisdom and the depth of what he shared with those students. So with that said, I am now opening up the board to anyone who would like to make a comment or share a story. So folks from 631-451, 973-373-321-420, and I'm just calling out the first couple of numbers, your first six numbers, not the rest, because, you know, I don't publicize your numbers on the line. So if any of you would like to hit one on your telephone and join the labrish, please do so. Okay, I see 631-451. Your mic is going to be open in 1 second. Welcome to the backyard. You've got Margaret in her favorite chair. Who do I have?
Hello, this is Janine from Long Island.
Welcome, Miss Janine, loyal fan.
How are you
today?
I'm good, thanks.
All right.
I'm here listening to everything you're saying, and it's really interesting.
Really? Well, I'm glad you find it interesting, because, you know, I never know what's going to interest the fans. But, you know, because I'm really doing this because it's my passion,
right,
and I think I shared with you several times that the reason I started it is because I have three wonderful grandsons. They're very small, and I'm very old. My eldest just turned 9 or 8. I can't even remember. That's how old I am.
Oh.
But I know that. He does everything online. And he's only going to find information online. So I want some of these precious things to be online if he ever, you know, want to do Jamaican history.
Right.
And he will not just have to read it, but he can hear some of it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think we have marvelous tools now that we need to engage and embrace and use. So, Miss Janine, do
and
you
he can
have any
also
comments on what we said?
he can also say, that's my grandmother.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I broadcast while at their house, and they want to listen while I'm shooing them out of the house, you know.
Yes, yes.
They want to talk. But, you know, it's not just for my grandsons. It's for all the grandchildren of the people in the diaspora, or those even living in Jamaica.
Right.
Because this is the medium that the kids are going to use. You know,
mm-hmm.
they're hardly reading anything now unless it's on their Nook or their whatever.
Yeah.
They're reading on their iPads and everything else, you know what I mean?
Yes, different from our time.
Yes, but we just have to go with the flow.
Right.
You know, you can't turn it back.
That's it.
And we would like for them to be doing other things, but, you know, that's not the way they do things now.
Yes.
So we have to engage them with the technology that they're familiar with. You know, the kids are coming out of the hospital now with something in their hand to push a button and expect things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we fogies got to get with the program.
You can say that one again. Sometimes my grandchildren let me look stupid. They're so up with everything, you know.
So did you know anything about any of the timeline part? I was really very intrigued when I didn't know that Dr. King was only 15 when he went to college.
No, that I didn't remember. If I heard it, I really didn't remember it.
Wow. I mean, that is powerful. But you know, as he said, I have a dream message. You know, he was born to do what he did.
Yes.
And we're all born to do something. We're
exactly.
all born to do something great.
Yeah.
And people think that if they can't do what Dr. King did, they can't do anything. But you know, you can, as Dr. King said, you can be great sweeping the street.
Street, yes, that is so
true. You know
true.
What I mean? Because the angels are going to say, damn,
yes.
This is a great, whoever
yes.
he was
exactly.
a great.
Yes,
street.
You have to have pride in whatever you do, you know.
Right, right, right. And I think that is the lesson that we need to take from some of these great people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we can, each one of us can be great at something.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we are
yes.
great at something.
We are all here for a reason and for a purpose.
Right.
And
it could be one person that you inspire by doing something, by saying something, whether
exactly.
you're giving them a little nugget of wisdom or you're helping them in some way.
Right.
Can all contribute to making the world a better place.
Yes, yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
It, we're passionate about recycling.
Clean, yeah.
And we do it in a way that we inspire somebody else to recycle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're contributing.
That's it.
So I think we need to feel good about whatever we are doing.
Yes, that's true.
Know that we're making a difference.
That's true.
Okay.
So, Ms. Janine, as always, next week we are going to be talking about Jamaica and jazz.
Mm.
People just think we only have
reggae.
But even before reggae, we had some great jazz musicians
yes. mm-hmm.
who went on to do some great things all over the world. And I am just excited and fascinated by all of this. We are first in so many things. I mean, we can't even count them.
Yes.
And so we have really, I know that it would seem by appearances that so many bad things are happening
mm-hmm.
and Jamaicans are involved in so many things that may be considered negative, and they're getting a lot of buzz and a lot of publicity,
mm-hmm.
and that is why I am even more passionate to have some positive,
to
very
bring out
positive
the good.
Yes,
information
to bring out the good. Mm-hmm.
That I am hoping that the fans will be sending. You know, there are lots of things that we've done over the past 3 years. I've been broadcasting since August of 2008.
Yes.
Every one of the programs is bringing something to light about our history. You know, we did lots of information on the history of the parishes as they were named, while they were named, who are the great people of that parish. So there's a lot of wonderful information that's already in the archives.
Mm-hmm.
So you can listen, for those people on the board, you can listen at your convenience to several of the shows. And if you find a show that you think would inspire or interest one of your friends,
yeah,
even if they're not on my list, all you have to do is copy the address of what you were listening to and send it to them in an email and invite them to listen to it. You know, and you never know. They might find something out that they never knew before.
Right.
Or it might inspire them to
yes
go check on something. So with that said, Miss Janine and Miss Audrey, I really appreciate your being here and putting up your hand and lavishing with me, because sometimes the backyard gets sort of lonely. A lot of people are in their chairs, but, you know, they don't always put their hands up, but they're always welcome. I still just, I'm just pleased that they're here with me, and they usually stay for the entire show, which really makes me feel very special. So I thank everybody for being in the backyard with me, hanging out, and whatever you're sipping on, whether it's coconut water or it's rum and coconut water, even if we're doing it virtually in our minds, you know, I hope you're enjoying it. I hope you are enjoying just relaxing in your favorite chair. Because, you know, I heard Jamaica describe once by a foreigner as one big tranquilizer. That's how they described it. So, and we who have been privileged to grow up there, and we can really remember the times we spent at some special place.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I always remember those evenings when I would, at once in Kingston, I was living in a house that had a deck. You climbed up the little stairs, and it was the flat roof days where, you know, we had a deck on the top of the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, you could gaze at the stars.
Oh, man.
And just feel the wind.
Wasn't that beautiful?
Oh, my gosh.
You could
I can remember it, and I'm getting the chills.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, you were so close to heaven. At least that's how I felt.
Yes.
So close to heaven
so
as
free.
I gazed at the stars. It didn't matter what was going on.
Exactly.
In your life or what went on for the day or, you know, who upset you, what you was upset about. As you sat, wherever you sat, and you felt the breeze, darn, it was like you were in heaven.
Yes.
And I can really go back to
true. Yeah.
And it's so good, and it can be so healing to go back to those times in our lives where we were just so carefree and things were just so beautiful.
Yes.
That we can always go there if we just practice. So I hope that you'll enjoy coming back to the backyard, because that's what we do. We just chill when we come here. We don't get involved in politics or religion or who's right, who's wrong, who's doing what we want to change. We just want to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica.
The land we love.
And we love.
Hallelujah.
Mm-hmm.
So with that said, if anyone on the board would like to give a shout out to anybody or make a comment about the program or about the distinguished people we're celebrating tonight, which would be Dr. King, Mr. Allen, Dr. Tortella, for bringing this wonderful article to our attention, and, of course, Marcus Garvey.
Garvey.
And I don't know if Marcus Garvey had any children. Does anybody know that, if he had children? I know we know Dr. King had children,
yes,
and they're
yes.
still living right here in my city, as
yes.
far as I know, you know. But I don't know about Marcus Garvey.
I don't remember.
He was married or anything.
I don't remember hearing anything about children. I know they had a song about him, but nothing to do with children. It's possible.
It doesn't say here in the article if he was married. So it brings me to the point of how it is important for each of us to write our own history.
Yeah.
Leave something behind for somebody, you know, our descendants in some way that is accurate. Because when people have to put any history together, they have to make up stories.
Yeah.
And we do that a lot. You know, when I have my little sidebars, when I don't know, I make up my own story.
Right.
You know, so it's always better if we have the story from the person, especially now that we have all this technology where we can do that.
Yeah.
And I want to mention that, you know, when I did the show from Dr. Lumsden about Jim Russell,
mm-hmm.
I was fortunate to have some of my fans. Thank you, Janine. You are one of the person who helped me to get in touch with one of his sons. I had done some information about his son, who's a classical musician, who's Oswald Russell, and he lives in Geneva. He's still living in Geneva.
Yeah.
And because I was able to speak to his other son, who lives in Florida, and I'm hoping that I will have him as a guest on the show one day. He's recuperating from surgery. But his show is getting a lot of hits because so many people can relate to Jim Russell on their birth certificate or their
mm-hmm.
master's certificate or, you know.
Right.
And I don't know if I mentioned before that he was the one who married Bob Marley.
Marley. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and Dr. Lumsden mentioned, you know, that several people got married. And you mentioned Janine in his garden,
yes.
you know, setting of his marriage.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But his son, I had a chance to speak to his son after he got out of he's in therapy now for the surgery he had. And he mentioned that his father did not really talk a lot about his youth and his past. His early years of him
yes.
growing up.
Right.
And he too didn't know a lot about his father. So it brings me to one point, if there are any seniors listening online. I was talking to one of my girlfriends in Florida who we grew up together. I've known this family from I was about 10, and we grew up in the same neighborhood. And I was telling her how, you know, Mr. Russell did not talk a lot about his early life with his children. And she said to me, "Margaret, you're not talking a lot about your early life to your children. I don't know a lot about what you did as a teenager." And I say, "You know something? You're
mm-hmm.
right. You are right. They don't really know a lot about me, my life before they came into the world."
Mm-hmm.
And that is such an interesting point that I want to bring to the seniors.
That
does
is so true.
Your children know a lot or anything about what you did and how you lived when you were young. Well, some of them, I know my daughter seems like she's not interested, but then they might seem like they're not interested. Now, they're too busy with their own life.
Yeah.
But sometime in the future, they will be. So
yeah, because
I encourage you to get some, whether you write it, record it, or something, but you need to get that information about yourself that is accurate, that you can leave it as a gift for them when you're not here anymore. And if you would like some suggestions on how you can do that, you can really just go to my website and let me know that you would like. I'd love to help you with a very unique way about how you can do it, which I won't discuss on the air now, because we are here to just celebrate Jamaica and our diversity. But if you want some tips or some information of how you can do that, just feel free to get in touch with me by going to my website and just sending me your telephone number, your email address or something, and I'll be sure to get back in touch with you about that. So with that said, I want to thank everybody listening online. And for those who called in tonight, I can see you all on the board. And for those who interacted with me. So Miss Janine and Miss Audrey, I thank you very much for joining the Labrish. And with that said, I am going to be signing off now. We've been on the program for over an hour. I always book for an hour and a half, you know, but an hour is usually about the time if we don't have anything else to discuss tonight. So I would look forward to seeing you all next week. Don't forget, we're here each Thursday at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And next week we're going to be talking about our early jazz history. So if you love jazz, if you know any of the old-time jazz guys, be sure to tune in because we're going to have some interesting facts about Jamaica and jazz. So we'll see you all next week. And I thank you again for being here. And as I say each week, make it
a great
week.
And God bless.
God bless
good
you.
Night.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.